of adoration and the gifts of our love and the gifts of our attention and our affection. You are worthy, Lord, and there is none other worthy as you are worthy. We exalt and worship and magnify your holy name. We lift up the name of the Lord. We lift up your name and exalt and hallow and bless and praise your holy name. You are worthy, O Lord. Lord, there's not a day that goes by that we're not grateful for your love. Lord, every day we see the blessings of your love in our lives, and we thank you that your love is there. We thank you, Lord, that you've come in and made your abode with us. We thank you, Lord, that you've come to dwell within us, that you've brought your love and your grace and your mercy to us. And we thank you, Lord, that because of your love and your grace and your mercy, our lives have been changed. We thank you, Lord, that we are no longer what we once were. We thank you now that we have the love of God. We have the presence of Christ, the joy of the Lord. Because of your love, because of your loving kindness, we thank you, Lord, for that great, immeasurable love. No one has loved us, Lord, like you love us. And we're so very grateful. We don't take for granted, Lord. We don't count it a light thing that you've loved us, that you've made us to be new creatures. We thank you that because of your loving kindness, the old things are gone, the old things pass away, and all things become new. Such love. Such incomparable love. We thank you, Lord, for the love that has given us forgiveness of sin, for your love that has cleansed us from all unrighteousness. We thank you for your love that has given us eternal life, given us the assurance that we shall not perish but have everlasting life. What marvelous, marvelous love you've blessed us with, Lord. And therefore we praise you, Lord, and we worship you, and we bow down before your throne. And we say, even so, Lord, you are worthy to be praised. We exalt you, Lord, and magnify thy holy name. We lift the Lord God Almighty and praise your name, Lord, that all may see and may know our love for you and your love for us. You're the lover of our souls, and we love you because you first loved us. Great and marvelous, merciful and gracious love. We thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. We are most blessed to be loved by you. Lord, we thank you that we have the privilege of walking.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us in studio this evening Jeannie Soderman. We're going to be talking about water. And how there is a plan, there's been a plan for a long time, to convince the people that there is a terrible shortage of water, that our aquifers are drying up, that we are just running out of water throughout the world, and we're going to have international control over water so that people won't die of thirst. And so, the truth of the matter is they've done everything they could to create the crisis. They've done everything they could to block the building of dams, and they've already pulled down over 100 dams here in the United States in the name of the fishies. We just have to have the fishies swim happily up the streams. But what they really want, of course, to create a crisis as far as water and then use international control to bring everybody under the control of an international bureaucracy as we move away from freedom towards corporate fascism here in the United States and throughout the world. And certainly there's nobody who knows more about the World Bank water policy, about the meetings that are being held all across the country, than our guest in studio tonight, Jeannie Soderman. And Jeannie actually was taking a vacation, went back east into New England where she was raised. And her husband, of course, looked there, and what should he find in the in the paper but the announcement that there was going to be a special meeting there, an international meeting in New Hampshire. So, Jeannie, you tell the rest of the story.
Yes. Well, a week went by, and we were visiting New England, and that's where I come from, is Massachusetts. Born on a farm, we had raised our own crops, grew potatoes, corn. We had cows and horses, pigs, chickens, fresh eggs, milk. And so I have a feeling for the land. And so we went back to New England, visited family. And while we were going up the coast of northern Massachusetts, near New Hampshire, we came across the article in the newspaper. And it mentioned that they were going to have the first ever open science conference in the United States. And they were going to talk about a particular project called the Global Water System Project.
Global Water System Project. Now, what's that all about?
Well, it's supposed to be a loosely knit coalition of teachers in the universities and researchers, actually social scientists, researchers. People from 30 countries, about 125 scientists. A lot of the scientists were involved in computer modeling.
And, of course, these are from 30 countries throughout the world, aren't
yes.
they?
Yes. South America, Venezuela, you had them from Switzerland, Australia. There were about 42 of the 125 were from the United States. A lot of them were from the universities, and this is what I find amazing, is I heard one of the professors talking and saying, well, I have a 3-year contract with the University of New Hampshire. And so what they do is these particular professors that are very knowledgeable in computer modeling, they have contracts with the universities. And I call them carpetbaggers. They go from one university to another, and they instill their program to the other professors and also to the students about the environment. What I found about the conference, though, is they do not tell the things that we really should know. They only give you specific facts.
And really, this all goes back to a conference that was, well, to a publication in 1972 called Limits of Growth, put out by the elite in the Club of Rome. And there was, of course, a man in that named, certainly Strong, Maurice Strong. And that same year, they held the first International Earth Summit Conference. And they said, oh, you know, we're running out of everything. We're running out of natural resources. We're going to have increased regulation over the people. And then through the years, 1992, they had the second Earth Summit. And, of course, Maurice Strong was in charge of that. And there they put out the Global Biodiversity Assessment, where they laid out the plan to get people out of their cars, to stop greenhouse emissions, to cut back on food production, to do away with herbicides, pesticides, and fertilizers, so that they could create world food shortages. They said there's just too many people in the world. We're using up too many of the natural resources. And they began talking about this terrible water shortage that is upon us. And, you know, it really doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe. And then, of course, if you have people who are powerful enough to block doing what's necessary, taking out the dams, so no longer we have the underground aquifers of water, the water is simply all running out to the sea rather than being stored in the aquifers. And then if they say, oh, we have saltwater intrusion, we've just got to have more regulation of your life, and you're using altogether too much water. If people were only using a few gallons a day, there'd be enough to go around. But, I mean, certainly look at the Sierra. Look at the shortages of water in Sierra and the Sahara in Africa. And that's why we've got to regulate water use here in the United States, because there are water shortages throughout the world. And go ahead, Jeannie.
Well, there were some interesting sponsors of this particular Open Science Conference in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. There was NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the National Science Foundation, I come across that name a lot with my research, the International Atomic Energy Agency, and there was one federal government there, and that was from Germany. I thought that was interesting. Why would Germany co-sponsor a team like this?
Well, I think that, of course, we find that German companies are going throughout the world buying up the water systems, you know, and they're saying, oh, we've got to privatize water in third world countries. And, of course, we've got to do away with the local control of water systems. We want to sell them to corporations like German corporations. And this is happening all throughout the world.
Well, yes, that's what was mentioned in the conference, is they wanted to privatize everything.
And once they do, of course, that means the corporations control them, and then they double or triple the prices of water and of electricity and the things that we have to have, and we impoverish the people. And that's, of course, the story that we've talked about this afternoon in our commentary on the book on globalization and its detractors by Professor Stiglitz, Joseph Stiglitz, who a Nobel Prize winning author. And this is happening as part of a long-range plan, but each one of these are part of this overall plan to bring about a corporate fascist world. The shortages of water, how we have to stop, you know, the production of cows and of hoofed animals. And, of course, people are eating too much meat, and meat consumes too much water. And so we've got to do away with cattle production so there'll be enough water to go around it. And on with these ridiculous things. But, of course, if you say them often enough, you're going to be able to convince the American people it's really true. If you control the media, and if you can control what the American people and the people of the world come to believe and accept as reality.
Well, that was mentioned many times in the conference regarding the multinational corporations, where they had to manage the Earth's resources, and this was specifically on water. So they're saying these people at the conference, and most of them were from the University of New Hampshire, saying that the water has to be managed. And they talked about demand management. And, of course, that rang a bell, because demand management is one of the principles that the World Bank says you must manage the resources using this principle. And, of course, demand management consists of three items. First, there's a price-based incentive to enforce low water usage. And, of course, that's a fancy way of saying they're just going to raise the price, so you're going to be able to just use a little bit of water because you won't be able to afford using a lot of water. The second part of demand management is water rationing. So I believe in the future that there will be rationing. If you use over the amount that they want you to use, there'll be heavy, heavy fines. And this also coincides with what's happening in China now. They have demand management, and they have the same principles that they're using in China.
And, Chris, what is the quantity of water that they want us to use? Because they've already got everything planned out ahead of time.
Yeah, in the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, which was a scientific peer review from the Biodiversity Treaty that was mandated, they did say 10.5 gallons per day per person.
Is that similar to what the World Bank water policy is?
Oh, yes. Yeah, very definitely.
And how much would that be? What, a couple of flushes of the toilet and nothing to drink or what?
Probably a quick shower, or if you want to wash your clothes, boy, that gets into a lot more water. So it's not much water at all. And the third part of demand management is water restriction on specific uses. So they will actually look at what you're using the water for. Now, if you're washing your car, shame on you. They don't want you washing your car with water.
Because they really don't want you to have a car. If you read the Global Biodiversity Assessment, they really want to take the cars away because, of course, why should we have cars when people throughout the world are walking? And after our cars pollute and they're so big and ugly and so dangerous and they consume so much gasoline. And, of course, they're just creating that much more CO2, devastating the population and devastating the climate.
Well, that's true. And, in fact, the local Agenda 21 in Santa Cruz County says cars are unsustainable.
That means that sooner or later they're going to get them away from us. And most people say these people are crazy. The American people will never accept that. Well, I remember 20 years ago when I heard them talking about redistributing the wealth of America and redistributing our jobs. And I said the American people will never accept that. They just don't understand the American people, and yet it's happening today. And while our attention is fixed on what's happening over in the Middle East, why they're shipping our jobs out of this country, they're shipping our industries out of this country, they're lowering the value of our dollar and, of course, destroying the value of our savings and our pensions, and, of course, anything that's in a fixed asset, the dollar's already down 30%, and at least according to Joan Vian, she thinks it'll fall another 30 or 40%. And they'll do to the American people what they've done to the people of Argentina while we watch, of course, what's happening over in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's sad what's happening because if you know the blueprint, and there's two documents that Radio Liberty puts out that I feel is very important, and that's the 7-page analysis of the World Bank water policy. If you understand that, you'll pretty well have the blueprint of what they are doing today in the counties and all the regulations. Also, the 40-page critique that I did of the biodiversity assessment report, on two pages I have put what is unsustainable. And it's pretty horrifying to read the list of what they want to get rid of.
No, that's not your list. That's their list. That is
yes.
The people, these people of great wealth and power who were coordinated through Prince Charles, a sustainable prince, and then, of course, set out this whole plan at the 1992 meeting, the Second Earth Summit in Rio, and then published it. It's all published. It's all there. But then how many people are going to sit down and spend 3 months like Jeannie did going through the Global Biodiversity Assessment published by Cambridge University, where this diabolical plan is published?
I'd like to just mention a few items under the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report that are unsustainable. This is what they want to get rid of, the elitists. Ski runs, grazing of livestock, cows, sheep, goats, horses, any animal that has large hoofs, that means they compact the earth of Mother Gaia, the earth. They don't want any fencing of pastures, No modern agriculture. Chemical fertilizers, building materials.
These are unsustainable.
Unsustainable. Now, this is an interesting one. Human-made caves of brick and mortar, concrete and steel. That is unsustainable. So I'm wondering, where are we going to be living? Paved and tarred roads, no more railroads, floor and wall tiles, aquaculture, farmlands, rangelands, pastures, fish ponds, modern hunting, harvesting of timber. Now, here in Santa Cruz County, they've all destroyed us being able to harvest timber. Logging activities goes along with that. Fossil fuels used to drive certain kinds of machines, say cars, trucks, and a lot of our produce is transported by trucks throughout the United States. And also our produce, our food, our products are transported by the railroads, which is very, very reasonable in cost. Oh, this was a big one. Dams and reservoirs, and they want to straighten the rivers. Now, this is what I heard at this particular Open Science conference.
This was New Hampshire.
Yes, in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, about a week ago. They were very much against dams.
Well, they've already taken out over 100 dams in America, and I don't know, I think we have about 7,500 dams. They want to take them all out, and why? Because then, of course, the fish can swim. We won't have all that electricity being produced. We can have more natural flooding, and, of course, we will not be anything to drive the aquifers. In other words, keep the water pooled so it'll keep the aquifers and stop the saltwater intrusion. And then, of course, once we've done that and we have salt water getting into the wells, then, of course, we're going to have total control over everything, certainly take away the rights of people to have their own wells and their own property. So we'll have to put everybody into sustainable communities where they can be watched by the block warden like they are in China or Castro's Cuba.
Well, that's true, and this is what's happening in Santa Cruz County and throughout all of the United States and throughout the world. Dams are so important, especially here in California. I went on a water tour about 3 weeks ago, and there were people from the Bureau of Reclamation, the Water Resources Agency, and we visited, for 3 days, we visited the dams, and especially one which was just amazing was Shasta Dam.
Because they really want to take these all out, don't they?
Yes. Very definitely.
And you have to understand, these people have an agenda. They don't want you to know what that agenda is, because it's really an attack on Western civilization. And of course, it's really an effort, as they say in their own publications, to take the world back to the way it was before the wicked white man came. Don't sell these people short. They have the wealth of the world behind them, and they're deadly serious about what their intent, because they believe there are just too many people in the world. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get them down to maybe 100 or 200 million people. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and the guest in studio with us this evening is Jeannie Soderman, and Jeannie's telling us about this amazing conference he went to this last week up in New Hampshire. So go ahead, Jeannie.
Well, one of the subjects they talked about at this water conference, it actually was a science conference. Most of the people there were scientists, social scientists, which brings to mind, they were talking about the rivers and the sediment in the rivers, in the dams and so forth. And there's a lady that stood up, and she was very prim and proper, her hair swooped up in a bun, and she says, "I'm a communist, and I like efficiency." And the moderator said, "How many communists are in the room?" There were only two hands that were raised. One was that older lady, and then there was a younger girl. And then the moderator said, "How many social scientists in the room?" And there were about five or six hands that went up. And the moderator said, well, by the end of this conference, we should be able to find a balance. And I'm thinking, what's the difference between the philosophy of the communists and also the social scientists? They tell you what you're going to do, how you should behave, how you should eat, and what you should wear. So there's really no difference.
Yeah, they're elitist. In fact, I think it's so important that the listener understands there never was any communism in Russia. You had an elite dictatorship, the dictatorship of the proletariat, a ruling class, a massive military, a massive KGB, 250,000 government agents spying on everybody. Sort of sounds like the Office of Homeland Security in the United States today, which wants to establish an elite that will control us, because that's what the CFR is. And that's why, since the very inception of communism back in 1918, why people from the CFR have been working with the communists and financing the communists and helping the communists and providing them the technology and the funding to maintain their ruthless tyranny. So that, of course, we could justify here. After all, we had that enemy. We're going to have to, of course, pay our taxes and give up our freedom, because that's to protect us against the wicked communists. Now we have the wicked terrorists, but it's all part and parcel of the same thing. I mean, who was it who funded this world terrorist movement for years? It was the Russian and Chinese communists, who, right along with the Central Intelligence Agency. And if you doubt that, we have so many books written long before 9/11 that will tell you that exact same story, how the CIA worked with Pakistan and, of course, with Saudi Arabia to finance the world terrorist movement. So let's go on, though. Of course, communism is simply an elite system. We're moving towards an elite system in America today because we've forgotten what freedom was really all about.
Yeah, it's also corporate fascism, what we're getting into with the multinational corporations buying up all the Earth's resources. And it's kind of interesting when Fidel Castro comes to the United States, the first person he does see and visit is David Rockefeller.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder why David Rockefeller would meet with Fidel Castro, the wicked communist. But even more interesting is why Fidel Castro, the wicked communist, would want to meet with the leading capitalist in the world. I thought they were enemies, or maybe that's all showbiz.
Yeah, it might be an illusion there. Let's see. I was going to go back to this conference in Portland, New Hampshire.
Well, we're going to have to. We've got Jeannie with us, and she's talking about this conference she attended in New Hampshire, where they were, of course, this international conference on the world water shortage. And never forget, there's a water shortage over in the Sierra. That's why we've got to ration water here in the United States.
There was one element that they talked about, and the program was called the International Human Dimensions Program. And any of these programs that I'm talking about this evening, you can just do a Google on the Internet and put in International Human Dimensions Program, and that'll come right up on this particular agenda. Of course, there is global warming. And who causes the global warming is we humans. It's our activities that cause the global warming. And that was stressed. That was a given at the conference. They did use the Delphi technique, meaning they first had a large room where they spoke to all the people. I would say there was about 80 to 100 people in the room. And then after about 1 or 2 hours where the professors and the climate sociologists talked to the people, then they broke up into workshops. And this is so familiar because we do this now in Santa Cruz called the Delphi Technique. In other words, they're going to indoctrinate us with certain facts. And it was reinforced again with me because I broke out to one of the workshops. They broke out to about 5 workshops. And this particular one, they talked about dams and how detrimental dams were. And after about 50 minutes, I mentioned that I do come from California, and I had just visited the Shasta Dam up in Northern California. And this is where we get our water from Mount Shasta. And it was such a sight to behold because all this water is diverted throughout San Joaquin Valley and throughout California. And we produce two-thirds of the fruits and the nuts and the vegetables to the other part of the United States. And I said, we're feeding you people. Why are dams so bad? Especially when you talk about it's detrimental to the fish. Now, as you know, Dr. Stan, I am an environmentalist. I am a former member of Nature Conservancy, World Wildlife Fund, and Greenpeace. And then I started researching who was funding these groups, and I realized I was lied to. And so I said, no, I am not going to be a foot soldier for the elitists who fund the environmental groups. In fact, these elitists are not going to hide behind my skirt. And so I made a commitment to research and seek out the truth. Now, just recently in California, actually in Oregon, the Bonneville Dam, that is so important because there was four times the quantity of salmon going up the fish ladders. It was tremendous. And I talked about this in the breakout session of this Open Science Conference. And there were two facilitators there. Those are the ones that kind of control the questions and the answers. And they say, well, that's just probably something that never happens anywhere else. One was Japanese, one facilitator was Japanese, the other one was Indian, and I could barely understand their English. And so after the breakout sessions, we went back into the big room again. Everyone came from the five breakout sessions. And then each of the facilitators of those breakout sessions mentioned to the group what they agreed on. And this is another word, what the consensus was. And, of course, they never talked about how great the dams were for cheap electricity, for feeding two-thirds of the United States, and also that they're really not detrimental for fish because if the fish ladders are done properly, it's not detrimental to the fishery. So here again, we saw the Delphi technique. It's a predetermined consensus, a solution. They know exactly what the solution is going to be.
Of course, they can convince you that truth is falsehood and falsehood is truth. The whole idea of dialogue, the consensus facilitators, they have a preconceived notion they're trying to set on it. And it's amazing how efficient that is and effective it is in every aspect of life today. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Jeannie Sodeman. When we get back, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
For them and let them see that you are opening doors for them. Doors of escape and doors for provision. And let them see that you're closing.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener supported, and we of course look to you to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day across America, trying to reach people with an understanding of what's really going on. Now, I just want to mention to our listeners who are listening tonight that Radio Liberty is putting a conference on out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be there on the evening, all day long on the 29th of November. And, of course, the conference will be starting at 8:30 in the morning and going until evening, go till about 5:30 in the evening or 5:15 in the evening. We're going to have lunch there. So, of course, we're going to ask you to call ahead and make your reservations. We're going to have all sorts of great speakers there. I think that you'll really enjoy the program. We're going to talk about the Patriot Act and the war in Iraq and, of course, what's happening in the church, certainly Christian persecution. We're going to have Brad Dacre speaking. And so we do hope that you'll be interested in coming. So if you'd like to make your reservations, what you can do is call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, 1-800-544-8927. And if you would like to call, just tell them you're interested in going to the conference on the 29th of November. That's 2 days after Thanksgiving. And hopefully a good time will be had by all. I know we had one of these last year. In fact, Jeannie spoke at that one. And we actually had people who, at the end of the day, they didn't want to go home. They really enjoyed it so much. You got a chance to talk to a lot of the people who feel exactly the way that you do. And we had people, actually we had a gentleman there from Germany, and we had people who had flown in from other parts of the country. So we hope that some of you will seriously consider signing up now for our conference, because we have to know ahead of time exactly how many people are going to be there. Again, it's the 29th of November. It is at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. Doors are going to open about 7:30, 7:45, and the conference is going to start at 8:30 in the morning. So give serious consideration to coming. Please talk it up with your friends and relatives. We'd like to get a very, very good turnout. And we're looking forward to seeing every one of you there. So the other thing is, if you'd like, of course, to seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us, again, our number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Our future, our family are under attack. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest in studio this evening is Jeannie Soderman, and she's talking about this conference she was at last week, where they brought in people from 30 countries throughout the world planning on how to regulate the water here in the United States. But it's not just in the United States. This is all part of a long-range scheme to convince the people of the world there's a terrible, terrible water shortage, and we're just going to have to give up our freedom because we're running out of water. If you'd like to give us a call, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Why don't you pick up the story from there, Jeannie?
Well, they've divided the water in two components. They have the real physical water that you can see and feel. The other water is called virtual water. And that describes the amount of water that is used to produce a product. And it will reflect all the costs, financial, environmental, and social. Now, it's also called full cost pricing. And I came across that about 5 years ago under the planning guide of the Local Agenda 21, which actually is a blueprint for the county and the public representatives, how they should implement Local Agenda 21.
For our listeners, Agenda 21 is simply the agenda for the 21st century, the plan of the fascists to control the populace. But you don't want to say that, so you call it Agenda 21 because it sounds better.
In this full cost pricing, is going to entail a lot of costs, a lot of taxes. So the demand management, going back to the World Bank water policy, will actually be a rationing component there. Now, it's very interesting how they plan to do that. And if we kind of look in the future, we're going to have some kind of a monitor system to see how much water we use. And that is why they are so interested in Santa Cruz County to put water meters on the private water wells. And was it about a year and a half ago, they were going to put meters on the private water wells. And 400 people came down off of the Santa Cruz Mountains. I got to give them credit. And they said, no, this is not going to happen. And the Board of Supervisors backed off. But somehow, they do have to monitor our water use.
Well, I saw an ad in the paper just the other day talking about the terrible crisis, the water crisis that we have here, and how the water boards just aren't responding to this terrible water crisis and the shortage of water that we have here in Santa Cruz. Now, for people who don't know, we live in this beautiful society. It's got mountains very, very close to the ocean, and there's abundant water there, but they've blocked every effort to harness that water. They've blocked efforts to build dams. Why? Because if you had dams, you wouldn't have a problem. They blocked efforts to build reservoirs. Why? Because if you had reservoirs, you wouldn't have the problem. Or to build ponds or anything else. They spent literally millions of dollars doing studies and studies and studies and studies, but never doing anything. Why? Because if they did anything, the problem would be very easy to solve, and how would you get the crisis? And so now we're hearing about the terrible water crisis in this area. Long-range planning. 25, 30 years ago, we could have had the dams put in, and they blocked those then, and they're blocking them today.
Well, you know, as an environmentalist and someone that really loves the earth and the plants and the animals, I'm thinking, well, I'll just grow my own food. And I don't think that's going to happen, because I was reading last year in Salem, Oregon, they had a city council, and the president of the Salem City Council, and he was actually former president of the Oregon Socialist Party, they actually wanted to take and restrict the size of the gardens in Salem, Oregon. That is just surprising. Restrict the gardens. And so this is private property that we want to grow our food on. So when the rationing comes up under demand management, you will have a choice. Now this is a choice, it's voluntary, of how you want to use your water. Do you want to have a bath, a shower? Do you want to wash your clothes, drink water, and do you want a garden? Gardening takes a lot of water, and this is where if you go over your prescribed amount of water, they will have excessive fines, and this is in the World Bank water policy. And the one example in the World Bank water policy that they love is Beijing, China. Isn't that wonderful that we're going to follow the lead of Beijing, China?
Well, of course, I don't know why we should be surprised. Who was it who brought communism to China? You have to go back and study what happened in 1949. It was the American government that brought communism to China by, of course, withholding any aid for the nationalist Chinese, putting an arms embargo so they couldn't get weapons anywhere in the world. Weapons that already bought and paid for, they couldn't get. And the weapons that were authorized by the United States Congress sat in ships for a year and a half in the ports here in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And the State Department refused to carry out the directives of the United States Congress. And then when the rifles finally arrived there, why they looked at the rifles that we'd sent over, and they didn't have any bolts in them, and they were useless. We brought communism to China. So a great social experiment. And, of course, we didn't want the competition for our industrial base, which, of course, was one day to lead the world into the New World Order and, of course, the New World Religion. Jeannie, would you like to talk about the cattle, why raising cattle is really such a terrible thing, and why we're going to have to give up eating meat?
Well, that was raised at the Open Science Conference in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, a couple of weeks ago. The meat diet was terrible. How dare you eat meat when other people in the world are starving and they don't have enough water? So what they equated to you being a bad person because you're not sacrificing for the rest of the world. And with cattle, of course, the cattle eat grain, grass, they drink water, And so it takes a lot of water to grow the cereal crops, the grain, and so forth. So they feel that meat is unsustainable.
And I suppose that's logical because people are starving in Africa. We should stop eating meat here because, of course, it consumes so much grain and water, especially the water.
Well, you know, I live part-time in a third world country, so I have seen it firsthand. And this third world country is no longer third world. It's coming up very fast. And, of course, the United States is coming down. So we're going to meet at the lowest common denominator. And that is El Salvador. It does have freedoms actually more freedoms in the United States right now. But it is the government that is the problem. Here you have a lot of water in El Salvador, in Central America, and we don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the distribution of the water to the people. And that's what's so important is our government in the United States, under the Constitution of the United States and our Bill of Rights, is we have such a wonderful system of distribution of the water. In El Salvador, no, the women have to go down to the stream, and they actually take stream water for drinking water. And they have wonderful clear water in the wells, artesian wells down there. So it's actually the form of government that they really need to export throughout the whole world. That's a constitutional republic government.
It's such a shame we've done away with our constitutional republic and, of course, become a democracy. And democracies, as Plato warned, always become despotisms. Let's go to Dan calling from Spokane. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Good, good. I'm enjoying this show because this is of real interest to me. I'm in Washington State, and in Washington State here, just a couple of years ago, they tried to get, just out of the blue, the legislature tried to get meters put on private wells. And you know, no one could quite figure out where that came from. People hollered at it and got it voted down or got it put down. But I hear they're going to try again.
Of course, it's all part of this worldwide policy that, of course, they concealed from the American people. And Rush Limbaugh and Dan Rather and Tom Proker aren't going to tell you what you're hearing here tonight.
You know, that's I listen to Michael Savage. I guess I enjoy that show a lot. And he talks about things like this. Occasionally he'll say something. And he says the same thing that you're saying, that the regular news that you listen to, most of us listen to, just isn't going to tell you about this. And it seems so outlandish that, you know, you have a tendency not to believe it until one day you get you see an article in the paper that there's going to be a meeting and just like your guest was saying, you know, you may attend if you wish and they will discuss the use of water. When in fact the water issues were settled, as far as I'm concerned, in 1900, you know, all of a sudden it's all up for rediscussion.
It's up for rediscussion because the fascist element realizes that if they can convince us there's a water shortage in the Sierra, and that's why we have to ration water here in the United States, and there's famine in Africa, that's why we've got to stop eating beef here in the United States. If they can convince us of that, they can convince us of anything, and they can take away our freedom, and this whole issue of water has to do with restricting freedom. That's what it's about. That's what it's really about, but they don't want you to know that.
It seems so odd, but I think you're actually right, and it's a matter of elitism, you know, and whoever is, it's just the elite is imposing these standards on us. Interestingly enough, I read a book, Perelandra, written by C.S. Lewis, who taught at Cambridge, you know, this is where some of this stuff is coming from. This book was written in 1944, and it's just a fiction, a story he's telling, and in that book, he actually writes about how an elite would take over the natural resources one day, and it sounds almost like your guest has read that book and is repeating it. In other words, this is an old scheme; it's just coming up again. And hopefully, if enough of us are aware of it, we can put it down.
Well, you've got to help us, Dan. You've got to get people listening to our programs, and you need to get the four tape sets we have, even on this one subject, which should affect everybody there in Washington. You know, because of course, if you're in a rural area and you have a well, they're going to get a meter on it. They're going to start out saying, oh, we're just trying to evaluate the amount of water being taken out of the aquifer, but ultimately they're going to use it to ration water. Don't you ever let them put that meter on your well.
Well, we'll sure fight it. And I was going to say, I happen to know that a residential house is plumbed for 800 gallons a day. That's in the United States. And a bank will loan you money on based on that. If you have an 800-gallon a day well, they'll usually work you a loan. If you have less than that, you can't get financing in most cases.
Yeah, but you ought to see the World Bank water policy. They're talking about 10.5 gallons a day.
Yeah.
That's the maximum amount for you and for every member of your family. So you'd have to have about 80 members in your family to use that 800 gallons.
That's exactly right. Now, let me ask a question. I want to hang up and listen, and that is, when you approach the politicians, you know, whoever your local politicians are, and you present this information to them, I'm sure you have to be pretty careful about how you do it, you know, but I mean, if you could get them to listen to you, are you getting any results there? I mean, if you'd ask that of your guests, I would appreciate it.
All right, Jeannie, did you hear the question? How would you respond to Dan? Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Well, we have a representative, Sam Farr. And we have a letter from him to Jeannie Nordland. She was the one that coordinated and wrote the local Agenda 21 in Santa Cruz County.
Which is basically a plan for a fascist society.
Yes.
Everything will be controlled by the elite.
Right. And he praises the program, Agenda 21, and he praises her and the people behind that. And so we have asked him in public meetings about this letter in Agenda 21, and he flatly refuses to discuss it or even acknowledge that letter. Here in Santa Cruz County, all our Board of Supervisors are very aware of what's happening, and so we're not getting anywhere with the Board of Supervisors. But let me tell you what might be coming up and what we're thinking about. In every county, there is a plan that has been passed. And let me talk about Santa Cruz County, California, because this is so important. In 1990, there was a ballot initiative that was put on regarding, it was called Measure C. It was called the Decade for the Environment. Well, at that time, we did not know about Agenda 21, but we analyzed it about 4 years ago. And it really goes in sync, Measure C, with Agenda 21. So what they did, they just renamed it another name. And the voters did pass it, and it was good for 10 years. It just came up in 2000, and the Board of Supervisors could either put it on the ballot again for a voter's vote or readopt it. And, of course, Agenda 21 was getting a bad name in Santa Cruz County, so the Board of Supervisors just arbitrarily readopted it. It's legal. They do everything legal. It's rather cute. What we're looking at is putting an initiative on the ballot, in the future ballot, and reversing Measure C, Agenda 21. This is a very socialist type of county, but if the environmentalists understand that it's not protecting the environment, it's actually taking away all their rights regarding what food they eat, how much water they use, what clothing they wear, where they live, and what they think. So we can actually get the word out. There's also a legal term in under United States Code 18. It's called misprision. And that means if a public official knows any felony or treason against the United States, a different form of government. And that's what they're doing. They're creating a parallel form of government right now before they have total control of us. The public officials can be tried under this term, misprision, and they can be put to jail, or they can be fined heavily. So there's many avenues that we're looking, especially in Santa Cruz County. Right now, here in Santa Cruz County, they're all bought and sold. And it's just like reading Sun Tzu, when the people feel, oh, this is so big. I mean, we've got money coming from Rockefeller. We've got the Rothschilds money, Bank of International Settlements. We've got all these big institutions that's for this tyrannical program. What can we do as ordinary citizens? And Sun Tzu said, if we can convince the people that they cannot do anything, then we can win without a shot. And so we have to be aware that we don't want to go by the philosophy of Sun Tzu, that every individual is very, very powerful.
And of course, the major thing is educating the public, and that's what we do. And of course, if you'd like to get the Sustainable Development Syllabus that contains the World Bank Water Policy, that contains a Gini summary of the Global Biodiversity Assessment, it's 40 pages long, but that's a lot better than reading the 1,142-page book. You need to get that information. You need to help us get that out across America. You need to get our four-tape set on sustainable development, and we're going to put together a four-tape set on water based upon Jeannie's conferences, because she goes to all these conferences and, of course, finds out what they're doing and then is trying to get us informed so we can inform you so you can inform others. So if you're out there, you need, of course, to take it upon yourself to get educated. And all of these things are so very, very obvious. And then when you get that notice in the mail that they want to put a meter on your well, but we just want to find out. We're just doing a study. You understand it's just temporary. We would never ration your water. Why you can say you're lying. We've got the plan. Why won't you tell us the truth? And at that point, they'll back on down. So you need to get the information. You need to help us disseminate it, which is why I do what I do, why Jeannie does what she does. And, of course, we're so fortunate to have right here in Santa Cruz a little group known as Freedom 21. And you can go to their website. What is it, Jeannie?
It's freedom21santacruz.net.
freedom21santacruz.net. Go up there. They've got a great website and a lot of good information, and we work very closely with that. In fact, we're hoping that Michael Shaw, who is the major mover in that, is going to be doing some programs for you here at Radio Liberty in the next few weeks.
I want to go beyond meters, because this is what's coming up after meters. They really want to get control of the private water wells. So they're looking at now pollution around the wellhead of the private water wells. And so this is going to be a reason of pollution near your private water well. And right now there's discussion in Santa Cruz County where the Environmental Health Services Department, they're the ones that want control, and they will have the excuse, well, we want to come and monitor the quality of your water. And that's what's coming up next. They kind of went by the wayside when people got so upset with meters on the wells. Now they're after the quality of the water.
Well, of course, they're here to protect us. And that's, after all, they want to make sure we're getting pure water. Isn't that what it's about, Jeannie? Or do you think that maybe they have another agenda? And ladies and gentlemen, these people lie. They're trained to lie. They're told to lie. And, of course, if you believe them, why, you do so at your own risk.
At the Open Science Conference, there was a mention of we have to change the expectations of the people, or we have to change the landscape. And I thought that was interesting, expectations of the people. And so what they're coming out with is, let's see, we're going to have a water crisis, we have global warming, the oceans are going to rise, all these risks, all these fear factors, and it's propaganda to the people, and the people will say, well, I don't want that to happen. And so they're really indoctrinating us in all these fear tactics. Again, this conference was so important just to sit and watch, because private property was never mentioned. It was a given that the public entities or the big national multi corporations had to manage the resources, and that's the word manage.
And of course, it's really all about taking away our freedom. We're just about out of time, Jeannie. I want to thank you so very much for being with us, and I hope we can get you to come back again and really go over this so much more here. I wish we had 2 hours this evening to cover this, but do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, it's so important to go to the meetings of the Board of Supervisors. And also, there is one meeting that you should really follow, and that's the Water Advisory Committee. They are the ones that give the suggestions to the Board of Supervisors. And so we follow that committee very, very carefully. So go to the meetings. The task forces, the breakout sessions, the stakeholder meetings, that's wasted time, because they'll just use your time and they'll come out with their own solution. Just totally wasted time. So don't waste your time, but go to the Board of Supervisors meetings. That's very important.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so much, Jeannie. Let me just, for our listeners up in the Great Northwest, remember next Thursday evening, that's September the 25th at 7 o'clock at the Shiloh Inn there in Spokane, Dr. John Eismo is going to be talking. If you'd like more information, call 509-891-7428. That's 509-891-7428. And then, of course, they are having their meetings at the Institute of the Constitution up there, and you could call that same number, 509-891-7428, to get associated with those Institutes of the Constitution, because that's where we're going to get Americans to understand the foundations of our freedom. And then, of course, we are having our conference here in the Monterey Bay area at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 29th of November, an all-day meeting. So if you're going to be down in this area or you know anybody in this area, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR to make your reservation or to get more information about that all-day seminar 2 days after Thanksgiving. And then, of course, this is the time we ask our listeners to pray for America. We ask them to pray for revival. We ask them to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because behind everything we're talking about are demonic and Luciferian forces. This is a spiritual battle. And the ultimate goal is a one-world government under the rule of the Antichrist. And you better understand this is not imaginary, for we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spirits of wickedness in high places. And ladies and gentlemen, we do have spirits of wickedness in high places. Good night. God bless. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, right now we have on the line with us Randy Thomason for Campaign for California Families. Randy, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, Dr. Stan. Good to talk to you. Been 1 week since the election. Can you believe it?
Well, of course, what's the word up there in Sacramento? Is anything happening other than Gray Davis is appointing everything he can and, of course, passing all the legislation he can to further complicate what's going to be happening here in California?
Yes, well, I've got the good news and bad news. First, the good news. As of Sunday night, Gray Davis cannot sign any more legislation. And he hit the deadline. He's done. He can't sign anything else, can't veto anything else. He'll be gone next month as governor.
Now, was that this Sunday or last Sunday?
This was, it's already passed, 2 days ago.
Fine, good.
Yeah, he's done with it. It's all in the past now. The bad is that of 900-plus bills that went to him, he signed over 90% of them, and 90% of the bills were Democrat bills, which means that Gray Davis, with his 10 on his last week, has expanded government. Big government has gotten bigger, and he's also expanded immoral laws. In the one I want to talk about is AB 17, which fines, it basically fires state contractors if they don't pay for homosexual partners on the same level as spouse. It basically funds homosexual marriage benefits as a state contractor, a business, or even a religious nonprofit that supplies goods or services to the state, or else you're fired as a state contractor. That was signed into law, and the San Francisco Chronicle, I think, pegged it when they said this was a dramatic gesture to the gay and lesbian activist as he was leaving office.
Well, you know, this may very well have played some part in his recall. I think there are a lot of people, both Democrats and Republicans, who were sick and tired of his pandering to hedonism and immorality.
Yeah, last night I was on TV that was covering your area, actually had listeners from your area in the San Francisco Bay Area and down south. Channel 11 there did a story on this, and I said, look, this is how tolerant is it to attack religious freedom, to punish people, to fire people from state jobs if they do not support homosexual marriage, turning marriage upside down, and pay for it with their own money? How intolerant that is. And if you want to find out more about this, Dr. Stan, I want to invite your listeners tonight to watch the 700 Club. The CBN 700 Club is airing tonight at 11 o'clock on the ABC Family Channel. You can get it. And it features a 7-minute report on the intolerant homosexual agenda. It interviews me as well as ex-homosexuals. It's a very well-done piece. And to understand the depravity and the intolerance of this whole agenda, it's harming marriage, religious freedom, parental rights. Watch the 700 Club tonight, and you can see that.
And what station is that on again?
That's on cable or satellite on the ABC Family Channel, 11 o'clock California time.
That's ABC? Is that American Broadcasting System?
Yeah, it used to be owned by Disney, but it's a satellite channel, and it's on cable called ABC Family Channel.
Okay, it's CBN. Okay.
Yeah, CBN, the 700 Club, 11 o'clock tonight.
All right, fine. Thanks. Anything else, Randy?
Well, just want to say thank you to you, Dr. Stan, for upholding what is good out there. I really appreciate you, and I mean that from the heart. Beyond that, visit our website, savecalifornia.com. We'd like to invite you to do two things at our website. One, sign up for free email updates if you do not receive the Campaign for California Families email updates. We're in a fight for California, and we need to group together as many people as possible, including you, and we do it electronically by getting you on the team with email. Secondly, we have a recall election center, and you'll see fine essays by George Will and Alan Keyes about how Governor Schwarzenegger is really a threat to family values in California, which is why we need to be vigilant. And then you'll see an essay by a man I disagree with on about everything, Bill Press, that is called I Want to Be One of Those Arnold Republicans. And you ought to read that, too, at SaveCalifornia.com.
Well, I'll tell you what, most Republicans are really elated the fact now we have a Republican governor, and you know, that the things are going to somehow be better, and if we can just get this finances straightened out, everything's going to be fine. But I think when you forget about morality and you forget about right and wrong, you forget about God while you're laying yourself open, because, of course, our materialism is a direct result of God's blessing on this country. And he withdraws his blessing from this country. Nothing any politician can do, whether it be, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger or George Bush or whoever it may be, nothing a politician can do can undo God's will when his wrath is ready to descend on a nation.
Yeah, we say God bless you and God bless America all too easily. God's blessing is based upon our obedience. And if we vote for undermining marriage, if we vote for undermining adoption in a family, we vote against protecting life, and we should say, well, we want financial stability. Well, Jesus said himself, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot love God and love money. You will hate one and serve the other. Those are hard words and something to think about. Our affections and our motives of the heart. And we need to really think about that. I usually say, God bless you as you follow him, meaning the Lord. We're not going to be blessed unless we are obedient to what is right, and God says what is right. And we need to be very, very careful about that, because we need repentance and reformation in our land.
Amen to that. Thanks so much. God bless you. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for you, Dr. Thayer.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to Brad Dacus here from the Pacific Justice Institute. Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Oh, doing great, Dr. Stanley, and I'd say I really share those thoughts and concerns, because you're absolutely right. This state isn't saved by balanced budgets. It's saved by people with repentant hearts who care about the concerns that God has. So, but I have to tell you, there's another entity other than the state of California we need to be watching, see where their heart's at, and that's the Supreme Court. Because today they announced that they are going to hear the case of the Pledge of Allegiance. That's not too long ago. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, as you're well aware, ruled that saying the Pledge of Allegiance, which includes the phrase "One Nation Under God," in the public classrooms is unconstitutional, a violation of the Establishment Clause. And so, consequently, we at the Pacific Justice Institute have been waiting to see if the Supreme Court's going to take it up. They are taking it up, and it's probably going to be in the spring. And we are right now busily working to file a brief to be filed on behalf of the people in California and people who have concerns. And if anyone would like to be actually listed as a formal petitioner of this brief, we feel free to contact our office, and we'd be happy to add their name to the list of people that will be listed as petitioning the Supreme Court to do the right thing in this amicus brief.
Okay, fine. Well, now, how could people get in touch with you so they could do that if they wanted to?
Certainly. We have a toll-free number, the easiest way. It's 888-305-9129, 888-305-9129. But we're giving something, though, in writing with their signature. So if they want to send something in with their signature, just with a note giving us authorization to put their name on the amicus brief we're filing to the Supreme Court, they can do that by sending it to P.O. Box 4366 Citrus Heights, California, 95611, 95611. Or you can look at our webpage at pacificjustice.org. That's probably the easiest way to get our address and everything else, pacificjustice.org.
Pacificjustice.org, and go there and pitch in and help Brad. He's doing a great job. Anything you wanted to bring up? Have you had any good cases here?
Well, yeah, we're seeing a lot of progress on the church front, and we're real encouraged on them making the headway that we see being made there. And also a little side note on one thing on the governors. We had a poll that we put on our webpage asking what's the most important priority for Governor Schwarzenegger. And it wasn't balancing the budget. That was number two. Number one was reversing the anti-family direction that California has taken. And I was very, very glad to see that from the respondents to this poll that so many have responded to. So there's still, we can't be discouraged. There's still many people have not bowed the knee to compromise in the state of California. We need to be encouraged by that.
We have an awful lot of good people out there, but they try to give this feeling that we're isolated, that we're in a minority. And I believe that's not true. I believe the majority of people are good. We just have to, of course, give them the leadership so they have a choice. They usually don't give them a choice, or if they do give them a choice, as we had in this last election, they say, Tom McClintock was a great guy. Absolutely, I agree with everything he said, but you know, he really can't win. He ought to drop out because, of course, Arnold is the one who's going to win, and he can beat Mr. Monty. Well, I will tell you, if Arnold had dropped out, I think McClintock would have won, and we have polls to show that.
Yes.
But, of course, those were never mentioned to the general public. It was only
right. The
polls that said McClintock ought to drop out, but never that Arnold, who really ought to be running as a Democrat rather than a Republican, but of course, who are we to say? After all, he has both Republicans like David Dreyer leading his campaign, just happens to be a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And then he's got Willie Brown as one of his advisors. Doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy?
Yeah, I know. There's a definite concern, and I assure you one thing. We at the Pacific Justice are going to be watching very carefully, watching legislation just as closely as before. And right now we're in the process, in fact, of researching the bills that Davis is signing into law to find out which ones are susceptible to being challenged in a court of law for being unconstitutional. So, it's not the time for us to sit back and rest. It's the time for us to be involved and taking initiative and not to lose hope by any means.
Well, thank you for everything you do, Brad. We'll talk to you later.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Stanley.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Brad Dacus, and of course, he's going to be down. He's going to be one of our speakers at the conference we're going to have on the 29th of this month, and pardon me, next month. That's 29th of November, 2 days after Thanksgiving. So we hope that many of you will seriously consider signing up and coming, and it should be a good conference. And again, the number to call if you're interested in signing up, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we're going to go into the Patriot Act, and I think it's so important that you know what that really is all about. Well, right now we're going to get John Spring on the line, and we're getting trouble getting John Spring on the line. Well, I hope there's not going to be too much trouble getting John on, because I have nothing really planned. So in lieu of that, while we're waiting to get John on the line, why, let's talk about some of the other things. You know, recently there's been articles, and they've been in a number of newspapers, talking about what the Air Force is doing. And you'll be pleased to know that the Air Force now is training several times a week, two or three times a week. We're having our F-16 pilots train on how to bring down American civilian airliners that have been, of course, hijacked by the wicked terrorists. And so there's been articles in the New York Times, in our local newspaper, in the Washington Times, and not just one article, but several articles in the New York Times talking about how we're training our pilots, our F-16 pilots, to shoot down civilian airliners. Now, why are they releasing these articles? You have to understand everything that's in the newspaper ordinarily is there for a purpose. And, of course, what is the message? Not what they're telling us, but what are they trying to get us to believe? They're trying to get us to believe that they feel that there's a very, very real threat of another terrorist attack here. In fact, we are constantly told by leaks from the CIA, which, of course, never leaks anything by accident, that this terrorist has said, oh, we're getting ready to attack America again. And then the next terrorist says, oh, you know, we're planning on another attack on the United States. So what they're trying to do is, with, in my estimation, with these articles on training the F-16 pilots to down American airliners, they're trying to convince us that the government really thinks that there's going to be more attacks on the United States by the Al-Qaeda terrorists. Now, why do I suggest that maybe we're being lied to? Well, because if the government was really interested in stopping terrorist attacks, they would have sealed our borders. They would have stopped trying to prevent the pilots from being armed. They would have put marshals on all of the planes, and we have marshals on very few planes. They've just recently hired 5,000 additional pilots. They've done everything they could to block putting any sort of diverting devices onto our plane in case the wicked terrorists had surface-to-air missiles and were trying to shoot down civilian airliners. And every effort to do that, oh, we just don't have enough money, we can't do that. We can't put any sort of laser deflectors on there or anything that we would have on other planes. No, we just can't do that. We don't have the money, we don't have the technology. Yes, Israel can do it, but we can't afford to. Imagine what would happen to the airline industry if one of our planes was shot down by a surface-to-air missile. The people in Washington, D.C. are not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. And, of course, they're not, in my estimation, really allowing the airline pilots to be armed. They're not putting the marshals on the planes. They're not checking, and they've not until recently checked, the cargo put on American passenger planes for explosives. They've not tried to seal the border. They've not tried to protect our planes from surface-to-air missiles, because they know something that you don't, and that is that they don't feel that there is any danger of an attack in this United States. Yes, because they've infiltrated this whole terrorist movement. They did this many years ago, not only our own intelligence agencies, but other intelligence agencies. You are told, oh, we can't infiltrate the Muslims because, of course, you know, of the laws against it, the Church Committee in 1977. Ladies and gentlemen, we infiltrated the Muslim movement. We had Mr. Salem involved in this movement in New York City in 1993, before the bombing of the first bombing of the World Trade Center. We knew every move the terrorists were making. We knew they were going to build a bomb. And then, of course, we fired Mr. Salem so that he would not be there to stop building the bomb. Well, right now we've got John on the line. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Well, pretty fine, Dr. Stan. I still have sinusitis, but I'll do the best I can.
Okay, fine. Well, I think it's so important that our listeners, you know, keep abreast of what's going on in the Middle East. Now, of course, we get a lot of reports there that, first, the left-wing press is telling us things are terrible. But, you know, I think that we're probably accomplishing a certain amount in Iraq. We're, of course, turning over some of the police work and some of the law, keeping of the law and order to the Iraqi police. We're organizing an Iraqi army. I think in the 6 months we've been there, we probably, at least in certain parts of the country, have been able to restore a certain element of law and order, haven't we?
It appears that we have. It's mainly around Tikrit and a few other regions where we find most of the factions loyal to Saddam Hussein still operating. And, of course, there are still zealots from other nations coming in to assist in that cause.
Well, you know, the interesting thing to me, John, is that the fact that, you know, here we have somebody takes a truck bomb loaded with explosives and drives it into the Turkish embassy, or we had just a day or so ago drive a truck bomb into a training camp where we'd been training Iraqis to become part of the new police force there.
Yes.
To enforce law and order. And everybody says this is a terrible thing, but nobody ever asks who puts up the money. It costs a lot of money to finance the terrorists who not, obviously, not working. Where do they get the explosives? Who's providing the explosives for them? Who's buying the truck for them? I mean, obviously, there's some country that's putting up a great deal of money to finance the terrorists who are there in Iraq attacking our troops. Why don't we ever address that question?
Well, I think one of the reasons is because the Bush family has very close ties with the Saudis and other factions throughout the Middle East, some of the other Emirates and Gulf states. And they don't want to upset the apple cart too much.
If they are protecting the Saudis, that's a treasonous action, and they, of course, I believe that would be grounds for impeachment. If the president is letting family ties or financial ties, influence stopping this war on terrorism, I would think that this would be an act of treason, wouldn't you?
Well, I concur with you that it certainly would be treasonous. Now, at the same time, Dr. Stan, it's very difficult to prove such a thought or feeling that you and I might have along those lines. But something is certainly very rotten over there in terms of what is going on, what is transpiring, why our boys are continually being shot at every day, and the rumors are now circulating that the next step will be to take hostages and kidnap military personnel.
And, of course, this is just going, of course, to, frustrate the American people. It's going to discredit the Bush administration. It will probably mean that the hardline socialists will take over this country in 2004. Maybe even Hillary or Wesley Clark, or maybe both of them together.
Well, I'm afraid that we will probably get Hillary Rodham Clinton, a prime socialist, Marxist, as our next president, the way things are going. I noticed today that they said that George W.'s popularity has gone up to about 54%. I guess it was closer to 50%, but those polls can change at the drop of a hat, basically. And all we have to do is to find more body bags with GIs coming home to a point where even the average American person is not going to tolerate this type of policy any longer.
Well, of course, we're talking about massive expenditures. We've already spent $79 billion on this stupid war. Now they're asking for another $87 billion. We're going to, of course, rebuild Iraq. We're going to not only get their electric system back to where it was, we're going to double electric output and, of course, take it to all the outlying areas of Iraq. Why should we make Iraq better than it was before we went in? And that, of course, is the question. Why are we building health clinics all across Iraq that weren't there before we went in? Why are we changing their whole educational system? Why are we changing their court system? I thought that we were there to liberate them, not in the way of nation building, and certainly not to keep our troops there indefinitely.
Well, I would agree with you, Dr. Stan. However, I think the Bush administration and the advisors behind this policy have an entirely different set of motives and objectives, basically. And I think part of this is to use Iraq, as I said on our last program, as a stepping stone for launching troops into Syria and also neighboring Iraq to the east, Iran to the east, and possibly even into some portions of Saudi Arabia, if it should become convenient to do so from their standpoint.
Yeah.
It is frightening, but it seems as if we are taking on an imperialist-type role, which was unheard of in the past of American policies that I can recall.
Well, I think what's really so concerning, I think you're absolutely right in everything you've said, but where is the outcry from the good Americans who are saying, we didn't elect George Bush to carry out an imperialistic policy and try to take on all of the countries over there in the Middle East? Yes, there are terrible countries over there, but, I mean, who was it who gave Assad, the dictator of Syria, $1 billion during the first Gulf War? Why, good old Uncle Sam. And, of course, what did Syria do with that? Why, they bought missiles, of course, a short-range and intermediate-range missiles to use to attack Israel, and they invested that in, of course, war materials. We gave this wicked dictator in Syria $1 billion, and how much have we given the Pakistanis over there? And now, of course, we're giving the Pakistanis $3 or $4 billion. And then, of course, Israel is working with India. So India will have AWACS, so they'll give them a military edge over Pakistan, because, of course, the AWACS then can monitor everything going on in Pakistan. So we're giving money to one side, and then we're allowing Israel, which of course is totally subservient to what we instruct them to do, to build up their enemy. So it appears that directly or indirectly we're building up both sides in this confrontation between Pakistan and India. And of course this idea of supplying weapons to both sides, I think is morally and intrinsically wrong, don't you?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. No one can argue for a potential bloodbath or an arms race which can obliterate one-fifth of the world's population.
That's what we did with the Iran-Iraq war. We funded and gave money to Saudi, to a Saddam Hussein, and we gave him the weapons, and we gave him the technology, and we gave him the satellite information about what the Iranians were doing, and then we were selling the Iranians all sorts of anti-tank missiles and other weapons,
yes,
that they could use against the Iraqis. So we were financing both sides and providing military forces for both sides.
Absolutely. There's one thing that I heard not too long ago from one of my Afghan friends, and by the way, in 3 to 4 weeks I should have a fairly substantial report on Afghanistan based on their current travels into Afghanistan. But one thing that sort of shocked me a little bit, and that is that many of the Afghans have lost confidence with the Pakistanis, and they are more inclined now to deal with India, of all people. It's somewhat surprising that they would take this approach, but when you have to consider the fact that the Taliban, which was more or less led by the ISI of Pakistan, literally ruined their nation, that's probably one of the reasons why they have taken this about-face towards Pakistan and they're now becoming more pro-Indian.
And of course, the Taliban were the students. They were students from Pakistan who came down and invaded Afghanistan. Of course, they put down the warlords and all the fighting there was there. But then, of course, they opposed this terrible authoritarian form of Muslim state, of Sharia law. And of course, really, then they were even far worse than the warlords had been.
Yes, they were. No one wanted the Taliban to remain, but at the same time, the method that we went about getting rid of the Taliban is something that has been almost covered up by the American press.
But of course, everybody's forgotten that we financed the Taliban back in 1964 and 1965. Nobody likes to talk about that or what George Bush said in his speech on the 20th of September of 2001 when he said, the United States is the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan. And of course, what he really was saying was, we've the largest source of foreign aid for the Taliban, who were, for all intents and purposes, the government of Afghanistan at the time. So why would we be so critical of this country that we were financing in the same way as we're so critical of the North Koreans, who we happen to be financing and giving them free grain and giving them free oil? And what's wrong with this picture?
Well, Dr. Stan, you have to understand that There is so much ignorance within the State Department. Several years ago, well before 9/11, I attempted to convey a report to the desk in the State Department regarding Afghan affairs, and because the event taking place was a meeting to be held on the island of Cyprus, I also had to leave a report with the Mediterranean desk. But unfortunately, none of these bureaucrats seem to be at all dedicated to listen or heed my advice as to what was transpiring regarding a future Afghanistan.
Okay, we'll be back here in just a moment with John Spring. We'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent on those of you in the listening audience to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours a day on radio and shortwave and internet and satellite. And but, of course, we have almost 60 outlets every single week. Some of them are just half an hour, but at least people are hearing the truth that they'll never hear elsewhere. So if you'd like to become part of our team, our number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. And then we certainly want to remind our listeners about the conference we're going to be having. It's going to be an all-day conference at the Aptos East Cape Golf Course, and it's going to be, of course, on November 29th. That's 2 days after Thanksgiving. We're going to have great, great speakers, and, of course, we'll be talking about the Patriot Act, and we'll be talking about Iraq, and we'll be talking about what's happening to the Christian church as, of course, it goes into the church growth movement, and they change the music and the message of the church. Brad Dacus will be here talking about Christian persecution. Bill Sardi will be up talking on health issues, and of course we're hoping that many of you will want to come. We're going to have lunch there because, of course, there's no good place close at hand to get meals, and so we're going to provide lunch that day, and we have to know how many people are going to be there. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR to make your reservation. Or if you want to send a check in, why, of course, I get the details by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we look forward to seeing you there. And then, of course, we want to mention our website, which is radioliberty.com. And you can go there and listen to our programs 5 hours a day. You can, of course, pull down our archive programs. You can pull down all of our newsletters that go back, 4 or 5 years. And, of course, we hope that you'll tell others about our radio programs. You'll tell them about our websites and of course, about our archive programs and about our newsletters. We hope that many of you will pull down the newsletters and, of course, circulate them among your friends. If any of you would like a free copy of our newsletter, and I'd suggest our October newsletter, which is Mindy Kleinberg's testimony before the investigating committee that's looking into what happened on 911. The media totally censored her talk, but of course we have duplicated in toto. My October newsletter, which will be out in a week or so, is a summary of Congressman Ron Paul's wonderful talk, Neocon Call to Arms. And you'll find, of course, we will begin to try to take you behind the scenes what this is really all about. Remember our number, 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we're talking with John Spring this evening. And John's a geographer. He has his own radio program in Southern California. Does a great job there every Sunday evening. When's that program on in Southern California, John?
Well, Dr. Stan, it's on every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. on KPLS, which is 8:30 on the AM dial.
All right, fine. And first, John, of course, had Peter Hammond on this last Sunday, and we're going to have him on. We're going to have him on actually this Friday for 2 hours. Really looking forward to that. But Peter, pardon me, John gets some excellent guests, and if you know people in the Los Angeles area, encourage them to listen and to support John's effort to get the news out in Southern California. Certainly the information you're not going to get from other sources. What we're talking about, of course, what's going on in the Middle East, the fact that obviously some nation is financing these terrorists, and of course we should take action against the people who are financing the terrorists who are killing our people. But of course we never want to mention that some of these people are being funded by Saudi Arabia, and some of them are probably being funded by Pakistan and its intelligence, which is getting its money from American foreign aid, and then, of course, some of it may very well be coming from the Syrians. We don't know, and, of course, no effort is being made to stop the continued funding of terrorists, and you must understand that terrorists, you know, they have to have funding from someplace for their transportation, for their living. You know, most terrorists don't have a big bag full of gold coins to finance themselves. They don't have a big bag of diamonds to buy the explosives with. Terrorists are supported by a government. And the only question is, what government is it who's financing the terrorists who are killing American boys in Iraq? And let's take action against them. but it almost appears as if we don't want to address that issue at all. So go ahead, John. What are some of the things you hear about? And you were talking about Afghanistan and what's going on over there, how really some of the people in Afghanistan are beginning to look more to India as an ally than to Pakistan?
Yes. This surprised me a little bit, but yet it makes good sense when you consider the fact that the ISI of Pakistan literally attempted to destroy Afghanistan. It's been a war-torn nation. And as you said, we have been financing the Taliban since the early 1990s, at least. And
of course, we financed the ISIS, which ISI, which financed the Taliban. So you really have to begin asking, why were we so critical of the Taliban when we'd financed it in the past?
Well, part of the problem is that we did not check where our money was being spent, basically. We assumed that we could trust and rely upon our allies, the Pakistanis, to do things that were appropriate, and we more or less took their word for it, and that's about as far as it went. We did not send agents to inspect what was being done by the ISI itself in Afghanistan to any great extent, and that's what really led to the Taliban being able to take over. And It was basically, I think, either a negligence on the part of the CIA and other agencies of the U.S. government, or else it was a deliberate intent of agents and bureaucrats of our government to more or less set us up for more dilemmas. And it's very difficult to know if it's incompetency or if it's dedication to destroying our nation that is at the heart of so many of these bureaucrats and agents within Washington or who are under orders from Washington.
Well, you know, of course, you would think occasionally the State Department would make a mistake in our favor, but if you look at the State Department and its structure, it always comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. And as
Absolutely.
Richard Harwood pointed out, you know, in his article, and we have this, we'll send it to any of our listeners, it was written in October of 1993, and he talked about, of course, how the President was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Secretary of State from the Council on Foreign Relations and the Deputy Secretary of State and all five Assistant Secretaries of State and the League Advisor to the Secretaries of State and the Undersecretaries of State. And, of course, they were all from the Council on Foreign Relations, as well as, of course, and he goes down the list of all the other secretaries of other departments came from the CFR. So you know, the State Department, the American State Department, has always been under CFR control, going all the way back to, the Second World War, when they really took over our foreign policy. And, of course, as Professor Quigley said so well in his book, Tragedy and Hope, you know, there are a lot of the crazy Americans who honestly think that we turned Eastern Europe and China over to the communists because, of course, there were communists working on our State Department. And, of course, there's an inside joke. The people who really understand it never was the communists who were influencing those policies. It was the people in the Anglo-American establishment.
Yes.
It wasn't the communists working at Time Magazine or on the New York Times. It wasn't the communists working at Harvard. It was the people from the CFR who were controlling our foreign policy. And I think that nothing has really changed. People need to understand that era immediately following the Second World War to understand what's going on today. And, of course, just by chance, if this were all by accident, occasionally they'd make a mistake on our side, and they never do that.
Yes. Actually, if I may add that I believe on my latest research that the CFR and other factions had more or less established our policy, which is even continuing now into the present and into our future prior to Pearl Harbor. At least that far back.
Well, I think everything is scripted. I think this war with Iraq was planned, you know, at least a decade ago, and probably much longer than that. And of course, the tragedy is the American people are never told that there are people who work behind the scenes who have a different agenda, who, of course, dream a different dream, who worship a different God. And until people understand that, it's very difficult to understand anything going on today.
And I was just thinking before we went on the air that there was something else that happened 41 years ago which startled the American people for a few moments, known as the Cuban Missile Crisis in October, I believe, of 1962. And yet people do not realize that there were very few dedicated people in Washington that were watchdogs or on the vigilance to prevent such a disaster from occurring, something that would have been far more disastrous than any 9/11 or bombing of Hiroshima. I'm talking about the destruction of at least one-third of the populated United States of America. But, of course, we do not really commemorate that time as we do 9/11 or the bombing of Pearl Harbor, because we commemorate failures more than we do successes. And that's ironic with the American people and the American policy. We should actually be commemorating our successes more than our failures. We should be rewarding those who are dedicated and prevent tragic events from happening, rather than those who were negligent and allowed, either deliberately or through negligence, a 9/11 or a Pearl Harbor to exist. We're just completely turned around in terms of our thoughts of rewards and punishment in this nation, it seems to me, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think that's a point well made, but of course, do we really know the truth about the Bay of Pigs? Do we really know the truth about the Cuban Missile Crisis? I'm old enough to remember that it was in, of course, June or July of that year, and that would have been the year 1962.
Yes.
That a Senator Keating,
yes,
was up, and he was saying, look, they're building a missile base in Cuba, and Look magazine actually published articles about the Cuban missile base, about the Russian missile base that was being built in Cuba. They knew that in June or July, but of course, they've waited until October, just before the election, and people must understand that by October of 1962, Jack Kennedy was extremely unpopular with the American people, and of course, he was going to lose control of the House of Representatives and maybe even of the Senate. People were going to vote against him. They were sick and tired of the socialist programs. Of course, people have forgotten. The mood of the country was very much anti-Kennedy. And then, of course, suddenly we have the Cuban Missile Crisis. And, well, a lot of people who were going to vote against Kennedy at that time, of course, they weren't voting for the president, but they were voting for his Congress, the Democratic Congress. And of course, after the heroic stand he took against Khrushchev, and of course, what he also did was promise secretly we would never invade Cuba. And, of course, we pulled all of our missiles out of Cuba, pardon me, out of Turkey at the time, and made tremendous concessions to Khrushchev. It really wasn't a victory at all. It was a series of concessions that we made. But, of course, what it really did was swing the American public vote behind Kennedy, and so they were able to maintain their control of the House of Representatives. Now, was that just an accident? I know very well that they knew that Cuban missile base was actually under construction in June or July, and they did absolutely nothing about it, and they suppressed that information. Had it not been for Senator Keating and Look magazine, none of us wouldn't have known what was going on. And then, of course, suddenly, just before the election, almost as if it was perfect timing, suddenly we had this dramatic Cuban Missile Crisis, and of course, Khrushchev cooperates with our president, avoids nuclear war, and of course, the president is the hero, and the Democrat Congress is reelected. Now, am I being skeptical? Am I being, too conspiratorial? Or are we often played as suckers over and over again by the people who know how to manipulate the emotions of the American people? I don't know, but that was the way I read it at that time, and I still believe that, of course, we've never really been told the truth, although we've had docudramas, we've had books written about it, but just as the truth about what happened at the Bay of Pigs, we never sent those boys in to win at the Bay of Pigs. We sent them into the one spot where they could not possibly have been successful, a strip of beach surrounded by a thick a briar patch, they called it a swamp, but it was nothing but a thicket. There was no way off that beach.
Thicket, yes.
We sent them in there. There was the one place we could be sure that they would lose.
Yes. In fact, I've interviewed one of the survivors of Bay pigs who was taken prisoner. He was only 18 years old at the time. But Dr. Stan, let me just say this regarding the Cuban Missile Crisis. I should say, the Kennedy administration had reliable information 1 year in advance of the Cuban Missile Crisis, of the infrastructure being prepared by the Soviets for deployment of the intermediate range and medium range missiles and nuclear warheads on Cuba. 1 year in advance. So I'll just stop right there and let the audience draw their own conclusions.
Well, they weren't going to attack us because we had our missiles in Turkey, and we could have just wiped out all of Russia at the time had they, of course, done anything to us. But that is not the idea, the picture that they want to give the American people. And it's amazing how they will come up with these docudramas and write these books to rewrite history, to alter the reality of the American people.
Yes, that is so true, Dr. Stan. The missiles that were in Turkey, if they were ever launched, they would have taken out the most industrial region of the former Soviet Union, mainly the Ukraine and the southern Moscow industrial complex, basically.
So they weren't going to attack us, and there was really no real danger of it.
Yes. There are many factors there, but what I wanted to get across, Dr. Stan, is that most of the American people basically are more concerned about their softball games, their baseball games, their football games, their soccer games, their basketball games, than they are about setting what's happening throughout the world, what's happening here in the United States, where our individual rights supposedly guaranteed by the Constitution, where they are going right now, because Americans want to be entertained, and unfortunately, entertainment is going to become the opium of the people. Just like years ago, Lenin used to say, religion would be the opium of the people. But we have certainly transferred that here in the United States to entertainment, of whether it's sports or motion pictures, live entertainment, whatever. That has become the opium of the American people. They are more concerned about their instantaneous pleasures than they are about thinking what is going to happen to this country. One of the unique phenomena this world has ever had, is it going to be able to sustain itself, to remain intact, or is there going to be some need for a change in our lifestyle so that we can become more aware of the basic freedoms that we enjoy here in the United States? Because they're not going to perpetuate themselves just by wishful thinking. It's something that requires a great deal of responsibility. Just like a lot of people might say, well, oh, it would be wonderful if I had a yacht, but to actually maintain and be responsible for a yacht and being able to afford the fuel and the mooring and docking and incidentals, very few of us would want to have that responsibility, or very few of us could even afford to have something of that type. But when it comes to something like our constitutional rights, it is something that we cannot afford to be without, and yet most people are just taking for granted the fact that we have freedom, and in reality, they may wake up tomorrow or next year, next month, and find out that that is no longer the case because they have been in dreamland. Dr. Stan? Hello?
Well, no, there's an old saying, freedom is never free, and somebody else said that a freedom never close thine eyes in slumber, for thine enemies never sleep. And there are those who would establish a fascist society here. There are those, of course, who want power. This has always been what motivated certain people. Most of us just want to be left alone and leave our lives, but there are other people who have a different agenda, and they will do anything to amass power, and many of them, of course, are working right in the United States at the present time. And it's not simply power over this country, but it's to use our economic and military power to bring about a one world order and a new world religion. And that is the frightening thing, and the fact that nobody is telling the American people that there is an agenda, and step by step they've undermined the very fabric of our Constitution and replaced it with the idea that we are a democracy, and that whatever our elected officials want to do, they can do, and we have a Supreme Court that is not answerable to the Constitution, but of course is now basing its decisions on the United Nations Charter and, of course, on the European Charter. And where is the outcry from the people? Where is the demands for the impeachment of the members of the Supreme Court who've openly said, our loyalty isn't to America, it's to the European Union and, of course, to the United Nations Charter. And these people are not fit to be in the Supreme Court, in my estimation.
I agree with you, Dr. Stan. Our allegiance is not to the World Court. It's not to the UN. It's not to any treaties that have been agreed upon with the United States and other foreign entities. It's treasonous, and yet this is how they look at things. Basically, Dr. Stan, it seems that since we had the U.S. Senate ratify, in fact, I didn't have any say in the matter at the time, but when the United States Senate in 1945 ratified the United Nations Organization, for all practical purposes, this diminished the strength of our Constitution, and people need to realize that as long as we are affiliated with the UN, we are not going to have the constitutional rights that we are entitled to. But people have to wake up, and we don't have much more time. There's going to come a time when we will not have the ability or will to break off away from the UN. It will be our master, basically.
Certainly a dangerous servant, but a fearful master. And I think that people have to understand that the United Nations Charter was written by Alger Hiss. And what people have missed, everybody says, well, he was a communist spy. And he was a communist spy. And the Verona Papers have verified that. And if anybody wants the verification, we can give it to you from the Soviets' own material. But what people have missed is that when Alger Hiss was arrested, he was the president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He had been placed there by John Foster Dulles, and of course he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And what people have not realized is that the CFR and the communists have always worked together. And of course, by focusing your attention on the fact Alger Hiss was a communist, you've missed the very obvious. No, he was part of the elite group dedicated to a new world order and a new world religion. And so we argue, was he a communist or wasn't he a communist? And of course, when we argue about whether Hiss was a communist or he wasn't, it's simply a distraction. The question is, what was his relationship to the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front for a secret, for a semi-secret society called the Round Table, which was a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891 that really came out of the occult, out of Masonry, and was dedicated to the destruction of individual freedom in creating this world authoritarian system, very similar to the one that Plato had dreamed of in his book, The Republic. In fact, Cecil Rhodes was a disciple of Ruskin who read Plato every single day. And the whole idea, an elite will rule the world one day.
Yes. Now, Dr. Stan, I could speculate to our radio audience as to what is going to happen in the Middle East. I could say that within a matter of months, it looks as if very possibly the United States will be going into Syria, and possibly 6 months from now we will be going into, against all logic, into Iran, because supposedly they have weapons of mass destruction, and in their case we believe very strongly that they have nuclear weapons or the means to manufacture nuclear weapons. But you know, I can say all of these things through very reliable sources, but unless people realize that here at home, if we are not prudent and vigilant about our own individual constitutional rights, I'm really saying something that's not going to have any meaning, because if this country is no longer a free nation, the information that I'm going to share is going to be of little value.
Well, I think really one of the things that the benefits for the other side of the Iraqi war is our attention is focused on the Middle East and debating where the weapons of mass destruction, should we have gone in or shouldn't we? while we're not watching what's happening at home, where we're losing our freedom, where we're losing our jobs, where we're losing the very foundation of our industrial base. And, of course, nobody's even thinking about that. The question is, did George Bush know that there were no weapons of mass destruction? And so we argued the wrong issues. What about that the yellow uranium that was supposedly coming from Niger? Yes. Who leaked the information on the diplomat's wife? And what they do by manipulating of the issues that the people are questioning, they distract us from the very important issues that you've raised, John. What's happening to our freedom? What's happening to our industrial base? What's happening to our jobs? What's happening to our economy? And most Americans are totally unconcerned.
And they need to be. It's just like this last election. Very few people here in California were really that concerned about what the final outcome would really be like. As far as I know, I don't think anyone's going to find a reduction in their car tax next week. It would be nice if that were to occur, but for some reason I'm not too optimistic. But more importantly, our individual rights or constitutional rights are eroding away very rapidly. The time may come very soon when we no longer even have a state of California. We may become part of a conglomerate or region known as Region 9, including Nevada, Arizona, and Hawaii. And we may no longer have representative government. And people say, well, so what? Well, when you no longer have representative government, you have no longer an avenue or means to complain to any authority. And when that occurs, you have dictatorship. You have an authoritarian government, and you don't have any say, and you are at the mercy of the government, and you are their servant instead of they being our servant.
Well, I think it's so vitally important that people look clearly at what's going on and realize, of course, what are we doing up in the Middle East? Why did we attack Saddam Hussein? Well, everybody says he was a terrible guy, and he was a terrible guy. But we financed him. We started financing him back in the early 50s. That's covered in a book called Unholy Babylon, written a decade or more ago. Anybody has any question, we financed him during the 1980s. We'll be glad to send them a free copy of an article out of, of all places, the Washington Post, how we were giving large sums of money to Saddam Hussein. And we backed him after he used the poison gas on the Iranians, and we gave him the wherewithal to build the poison gas and, of course, the bacteriological weapons that we're so concerned about now. And then, of course, after the first Gulf War, why we allowed him, of course, to actually continue smuggling oil out of the country. We knew he was smuggling it into Jordan and Turkey, and we allowed him to do that so he'd have enough money to maintain his authoritarian rule. But what is even more frightening, in both 1993 and 1995, there were efforts by the military to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and the American State Department backed Saddam Hussein. If you doubt that, the book is entitled See No Evil, or if you don't want to buy the book, you can read the excerpt from it in my newsletter. It's the March newsletter 2000. You can find it on our website at radioliberty.com. John, we're out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, I would encourage them to listen when you have Dr. Peter Hammond as your guest on Friday, because he is so well informed on what is transpiring in Africa, and he will address things, and he will call a spade a spade. Some of the things he may say are somewhat shocking, but they're very realistic, and I encourage everyone to listen to him.
Well, I think that'll give our listeners something to listen forward to. God bless you, John. Thanks so much for being with us, and till next tomorrow night when we're with you once again. May the Lord be with you.